What's going on, everybody, and welcome back for another episode of Triggered. This is Triggered, episode number 594 here on Wednesday, February 18th. The march towards episode 600 continues. We got a special episode here today. It's me and Corey this time because Matt is off to a warm climate, taking a little much-needed break, vacation. So you get me and Corey today. But big news of the day, obviously, we've been talking about it for weeks. The military buildup has continued, and it appears that we might finally be on the precipice of the full war with Iran, where we're going to wipe them out completely. Axios reporting this morning, and, you know, take that with a grain of salt because it's Axios, but I tend to agree with this assessment, which is why we're talking about it. So it looks like it's going to be a major, major campaign. I mean, it's the largest military buildup since Desert Storm, and it appears that it's probably going to be weeks of shock and awe, which is nonstop aerial campaigns. Looks like it could be a joint U.S.-Israeli campaign that's much broader in scope than the 12-day war that they had, obviously culminating in Operation Midnight Hammer, a great success. But we now have two aircraft carriers over there, 12 additional warships, hundreds and hundreds of fighter jets, multiple air defense systems, early warning systems. I mean, just in the last 24 hours, I've never seen activity from the United States Air Force like we've seen. The amount of tankers that they have over there now is unbelievable. More than 150 U.S. military cargo flights have moved weapon systems, ammo, missiles, fighter jets, soldiers, special operations teams to the Middle East. So going to be a very, very interesting time here coming up. I mean, my take on it is, you know, we've been waiting a long time for something to happen here. It appears that all the pieces on the chessboard are finally in place. However, I mean, this might be a bad prediction, but I don't think that they will do this before the State of the Union. Could be a bad prediction. I think there's also concern that Iran is preparing a potential preemptive strike on either our forces or Israel. So that might move the timeline up a bit. But what's your take on the whole situation?
Well, it feels real this time. You know, we've always, for months now, maybe even over a year since Trump took office, he's been, you know, teasing potential action. You know, Iran better not fuck with us. Then he goes back and says, you know, we're negotiating, making progress. We had a meeting at the White House. Trump had a meeting with Bibi Netanyahu at the White House last week. And there actually hasn't been too much reporting to come out of it, what they actually discussed, what their plan of action is going to be. Normally, when, you know, things are not going to take place, you know, things get leaked, more threats come out through the media. The fact that a lot of this is hush-hush right now and they're taking action out in the ocean, moving these military vessels, F-35s, F-22s, F-16, that's where we can predict what would probably happen, less so than what's being negotiated through the media and all of that. It feels very real this time. And yeah, you said maybe not before the State of the Union address. I don't think Trump really gets to dictate these terms too much if Iran starts provoking us.
Well, yeah, if they fire, I mean, obviously it's on.
Yeah.
But I think from a planned strike perspective, I don't necessarily see that occurring before. Now, it could be totally wrong with that, and they might use that to their military to take a W-term strategery. I do know that the Secretary of War is traveling today. I do believe he'll be back before the evening, and if this were to occur, it's going to be in the evening, because that's when you always want to start from a operations perspective. But yeah, I mean, I think that if we have our choice of timing, I think it would be after the State of the Union, but that might not be our choice. You know, yesterday they were in Geneva for another round of talks, which ended with essentially them not agreeing to anything that we want, which includes a total cessation of the nuclear program, also their ballistic missile program, which are our two red lines. And unlike Obama, we enforce our red lines. Mm-hmm. And so then afterwards, the rhetoric out of Iran totally changed. And the Supreme Leader, Khamenei, who's whose days are probably numbered. He, came out with the classic "Death to America," blah blah blah. We'll never end our nuclear program, all that. So, the idea that they want a deal pretty much went up in smoke yesterday. And as soon as that happened, you saw immediately all of our essentially aerial refueling tankers and more cargo heading to the Middle East. So it seems to me the decision's been made. It's just a matter of timing.
It sure does. My question to you and our listeners right now is, what is this going to mean politically? Obviously, Donald Trump is his main priority is to keep America safe. That's priority number one. But is the American people, do they have an appetite to enter, as Axios is reporting, weeks long, potentially months long war, just months before the midterms? What is this going to mean for the MAGA base? We are generally anti-war. I mean, I think everybody in general is less people dying, the better, unless you're Iranian terrorists. But if we're bogged down in this, is this going to take away the messaging from the victories of the Trump administration so far? We
Well,
saw
that
Susie Wiles just hosted a meeting with a bunch of cabinet officials and congressmen. They said the economy is going to be everything that they need to focus on going to the midterms. We need to focus a little bit less on the border, probably because it's been fixed already and it's not a driving issue for many voters. But is a war going to change the messaging a little bit? Are we going to be bogged down? We don't want to be another Iraq situation, stuff like that. So if we get involved in this, it better be quick and it better be efficient. And there's better be very, very hopefully zero, but at the worst case, minimal deaths to Americans, because Americans just do not want to go to war right now. Are you concerned about the political ramifications of potentially going into Iran?
Well, there's a whole bunch of levels to this, right? So, politically speaking, that's why my prediction is for post State of the Union, because they're going to want the State of the Union to be focused on the domestic victories that we've had. But that being said, I've always been pro war with Iran. I think that you have to cut the head off the snake in the Middle East for it to ever have a long-term hope of real lasting peace. Ever since pre-Obama Iran deal, I've wanted to take these f-ing terrorists out.
That's true. You have
So when
been
it comes,
talking about this for as long as I've known you, for about 10
yeah,
years or so.
exactly, yeah. And so when it comes to pro-war versus anti-war with Iran, I am very pro-war.
Sure.
That being said, there will certainly be a part of the base, the same type of people that have been obsessed with the Epstein files and shooting within the ship unnecessarily, that come out against this, and that's fine. They can have their opinion on it. The question is, what Trump needs to do what's best for America long term here, and short. I don't think short term political gain is anywhere in his capital in his calculation on this. As far as the midterms, how this affects the midterms will be determined on how the operation goes. I think that given the buildup, given that we have a great warrior in Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Raising Cane, and
Raising
President
game.
Trump, there will be no hemming and hawing and pussyfooting around on this. They are going to go for a major decapitation strike and try to take out as much of not just the leadership of the country and the IRGC and all of that, but also any military apparatus that's going to be left there. They're going to try to take it out quickly and efficiently. What I have been equating it to in discussions internally and with other people is that you remember, obviously Iraq didn't end up how we wanted it, but that was because we tried to democracy build in the Middle East, which is not suited for that, and I'll get to that in a second. But this is going to be a multiple weeks long shock and awe. You remember the first night of the Iraq War in 2003, shock and awe, where they just bombed the ever-living f out of everything that was moving inside of that country militarily. This is going to be that on steroids for multiple weeks. And it may only take 1 week, but as far as affecting the midterms, this is a gamble. This is a big gamble. Trump is the gambler. He is a big risk taker. But in general, most of his risk taking has always worked out. for us. Now,
The doubters have always been proven wrong so far in every single military action that Donald Trump's taken. Tucker Carlson said, Operation Midnight Hammer was going to be the
World
beginning of
War III.
World War III. How did that work out? So
Yeah, exactly.
we just displayed a new technology called the discombobulator when we captured Chavez in Venezuela. We have technologies that we have never displayed to the world. If we were to get involved in Iran, which it looks like we probably will, we are going to see it unleashed like never before. We did it in Venezuela, where their military is nowhere near as capable as Iran is. I think we're going to see and learn things about America that will shock even veterans, decade-long veterans, like, holy shit, you have the capability to do that? It will be shock and awe to the 10th degree that we've ever seen in America even capable of, anybody in the world.
Well, yeah, and I don't think that nor the American people nor Trump have any appetite for a protracted ground war, and I don't think that this is going to be that.
Sorry.
I don't think this is going to be Iraq too, and that goes back to also the future of that country. I think that Trump, especially, who was very outspoken about this, even going back to the 2016 campaign, so for over 10 years now, about the Iraq War. Some countries are not suited for democracy, and that includes most of the Middle East. And so I think that, the long term of that country is going to be, we just need to ensure that whoever takes over is America friendly. It's not going to be, I don't think it's going to be a democracy. There's not going to be, huge elections and shit like that. I do think that probably it will line up with the Crown Prince returning. Which seems to be the rallying cry of the people of Iran. So it seems that there's public support there. And you see that same geopolitical theory played out in Venezuela, where Trump chose the vice president over the opposition leader. And that was because he and the CIA concluded that she, the vice president, now acting president of Venezuela, could consolidate public support and keep things held together over there better than trying to bring in this outsider. As long as you're going to play ball with us and do what we want, honestly, I don't think we should give a f who the leader is. Sometimes you need a friendly dictator. We've learned that lesson quite a few times already, and so I think that that's probably what'll end up happening. Now, again, that's all reliant on a very successful military campaign, which I do think will happen. But there's certainly risks to this, both politically and geopolitically. But again, like you just said previously, the doubters have generally always been proven wrong. And sometimes you just got to let Trump cook. Just trust the process. Trust in the guy who we put there to do what needs to be done to keep America safe. And I think that people would be well suited to do that, especially if we can have what I think will be a very successful military campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. Let him cook, prove the doubters wrong as they've done before, and we'll bring it to you first thing, the second we hear at townhall.com. But
Great segue.
speaking of violent, crazy terrorists, we transition to our next topic. There was another one of those. Yeah, a tranny in Rhode Island, a dude named Robert Dorgan. He ended up killing his ex-wife and his son at a hockey game. The video is just disgusting and tragic. It's a dude. His name's Robert. He goes by Roberta. And to me, the funniest thing about this story, there's really nothing funny other than the fact that he not only did he decide that he's a woman, he also decided that he's a Latina woman. Yes, he goes by Roberta.
That's so not only transgender cutting off dick, but transracial too. It's like the Rachel Dolezal of trannies.
Yeah, and it's not a mental disorder. Yeah, please. So this guy goes into a hockey game with his family is there. And this is a dude who not only is just like taking, I mean, it's disgusting in the first place. You get all these people taking like puberty blockers and just if you're a woman taking testosterone, if you're a guy taking estrogen to try to like change their gender. No, this guy like fully committed. He chopped his dick off. There are pictures of this dude wearing tight, tight gym clothes. And I don't know how graphic we want to get here, but there was no bulge, but there was like a little,
Yeah.
what do they call it now? Camel toe.
Yes,
That's nasty. You
that
almost got to respect him. He kind of committed to the bit where he
Yeah.
grew entirely, chopped his dick off. He got boobs inserted. Total mental disorder. And there were signs, not only chopping your genitals off, but he was active on Twitter. He used to go after, he replied to a tweet from Congressman, who again thinks that he's a woman, Congressman Sarah McBride. He replied to a story that someone was bashing him, actually factually saying that this congressperson was a man, not a woman. And he responded, "Keep bashing us, but do not wonder why we go berserk."
Yeah.
Well, he decided to go to berserk. And this is a trend among trannies in the United States. This is just the long one of the long lists. We can run through many of them. Tumblr rich shooter was transgender. Annunciation Catholic school shooter was trans. Nashville Christian shooter. Lakewood church shooter. Colorado Springs shooter. Denver shooter. The list goes on and on and on. There are signs. When is America going to realize that, yeah, this is a problem that we should stop?
Well, to borrow a phrase from the left, we need common sense tranny control. It's outrageous what's been occurring here. I mean, it's clearly a mental illness, and the fact that it's been enabled over the years is just all the more disgusting. But my favorite meme over the last 24 hours is the one of 0 days without tranny violence. We made it to, I think, 2 days today. We'll see if we can make it to three, but. I'd bet against that as a betting man, but it's there's a clear trend here, and someone actually just recently did a very good data analysis on the overall makeup of air quote mass shooters, right? And so they did a breakdown by race, which ironically per capita Asians are the top one on that one, but they also did a breakdown by whatever you want to call it, normal versus transgender. And the per capita mass shooter rate of trannies is wild, wild, wildly high. And so it's time that we actually work in the facts here, and something needs to be done here. And I think you are seeing a rapid about face on this from at least people who are normal, right? Obviously not the far left. But I think you're seeing a quick about face on the idea of not only just transgender in general, but especially when it comes to minors, and the mutilation of our children and things like that. Obviously, Trump has done quite a bit on this, but you're also seeing states do quite a bit on this as well now. And even in places like New York, I mean, you have this story here. They're ending transgender treatments for minors in a Manhattan hospital at NYU Langone, which is a huge hospital. They discontinued their quote transgender youth health program.
They said, given the recent departure of our medical director, bullshit, coupled with the current regulatory environment, we made the difficult decision to discontinue our transgender youth health program. So that's a win by the Trump administration. They're starting to regulate this bullshit. And this is the way that this ends. But another big way that this ends, which we're starting to see momentum, you have these transition detransitioners, people who young kids who are misled by pressure and evil doctors saying that, oh, you actually were born in the wrong body. Let's prescribe you medications for the rest of your life. They have since grown up since this fad has.
Yeah.
And they're suing the doctors who performed these surgeries and/or just prescribed them medications. And now, finally, these detransitioners are starting to win these lawsuits. And they're suing and winning millions of dollars from these doctors and health providers. And that's the way that this ends. It all comes down to money.
Yeah.
It's the only reason why the doctors are prescribing this shit is for money. It all comes down to it. So continue all that good work by these poor detransitioners, and their needs. I think within this, the next 5 years, hopefully sooner, this is just a fad that will finally end. It has to. People see through this shit now. But in the meantime, there will continue to be more trans violence because they'll see that their fat is ending. And the people who went through with this surgery and procedures, they realize they're going to be kind of ostracized from society, which in fact they should be. A little bit more bullying when they were younger would probably be good for them, not more affirming their delusions. You know, if my kid was a drug addict, I wouldn't affirm it and say, "Hey, yeah, here's some more drugs. It's okay. It's okay." I would actually get them the help that they need. And these poor kids are crying out for help, and doctors are just pushing them down the exact wrong path that they started from. So, speaking of paths and traveling, poop is flowing down the Poop-tomac. How's that for a transition?
Well,
I
you
know
know,
you're following this story storm.
as the two of us have spent many times on the Potomac and in the Potomac in a much, cleaner part than right by the city. But it's pretty sad to see what's happening here. And now I think the largest sewage spill in U.S. history into the Potomac River, which is of course the river here in our nation's capital, a massive sewer line collapsed, spewing unfettered poo into the Potomac River. And now President Trump is stepping in. Why don't you kind of run through what's been the response on this around here?
Sure. Yeah. Well, the pipe broke on January 19th, and nobody even knew about it. There was, as of today, over, and all the estimates are a little bit different, but most estimates come in around 250 million gallons of raw sewage, which, to put that in perspective, is 380 Olympic-sized swimming pools of shit and piss just flowing in our nation's capital. Donald Trump, and this was a story, the town hall was covering it, of course, and very few outlets. Katie Pavlich has been great on News Nation covering this, but nobody wanted to touch this story because it implicates Democrats and Democrats only. And even the environmentalists who are Democrats would have to blame Democrats for the problem. So finally, Donald Trump Truth Socialed about it on February 16th. This was just 2 days ago. He said there is a massive ecological disaster unfolding in the Potomac River as a result of gross mismanagement of local Democrat leaders, particularly Governor Wes Moore. He goes on and on and on. He says the federal government has no choice but to step in. FEMA, which is currently being defunded by the Democrats, will play a key role in coordinating the response. Thank you for your attention to this matter. So the federal government is finally getting involved, and they need to, because this is a class A emergency. So Governor Wes Moore in Maryland, complete waste of a governor.
Oh, he's a fucking retard.
He really is. He lies about his military service. He really had a chance to propel himself into the conversation of the next, Democrat president nominee, but he's kind of failed on that when he had the chance to rebuild the Francis Scott Key Bridge, and that's barely been touched years after it fell down. He decides to bark at the president in response to his Truth Social. He says, "Mr. President, this spill is basically contained. Could you approve the FEMA funding to help Western Maryland rebuild after the historic floods last year?" There is so many things wrong with this response. You want to walk us through it a little bit, Storm?
Well, yeah, it's not, well, it's one, it's not contained.
Yeah. What
That's a
does
total lie.
basically contained mean? What the hell does that even mean?
It's a total lie. Their solution right now is to divert the wastewater into the CNO canal. And take a guess where the canal goes.
Does it
The
go to
fucking
basically the
river.
same exact place?
You hit the river, yeah, it goes to the same place. And now the disaster is spreading even further downriver. It's also now leached into the Anacostia River.
Yeah.
Because little known fact, E. coli doesn't just travel downstream, it also can go upstream, which has been a common talking point of the left. Well, the drinking water supply is drawn from further upstream. And I'm like, okay, but that doesn't mean anything when it comes to E. coli. I mean, I don't drink tap water anyway, but if I did drink tap water, I'm not sure I'd be drinking this tap water currently.
No.
It's just total denial of what's going on. And you're not hearing anything from not, eventually, obviously, Westmore had to comment because it's his fucking problem. It started in Maryland. but it affects DC. You haven't heard anything from DC. And it greatly affects Virginia because Virginia has the most shoreline of anyone on the Potomac River. Because obviously the Potomac River, after, say Alexandria, flows further downstream, into open water. And they're getting E. coli readings very, very far south right now. And guess what? Abigail Spanberger, the Reichsfuhrer of Virginia now, hasn't said a damn thing about it,
No.
nor have any of the Democrats down in Richmond, who are, in the process of destroying our great Commonwealth and turning it into the California of the East.
Yeah,
It's
gerrymandering a 10-to-1 map right now. That's what they're focused on, not the safety of the residents. Not even
well,
close.
that and also, taking our Second Amendment rights away and raising taxes and raising more taxes and then
Thanks,
raising
sir.
even more
Stay.
taxes after that.
Yeah.
It's the minimum wage, all that California bull, the green car, the green energy, the regional greenhouse gas initiative. I mean, the list is hundreds of items long at this point. And but yeah, they don't care about the largest sewer spill in American history, on our doorstep. And I can guarantee you, if this had happened in somewhere like fucking Mississippi, they'd have something to say about it.
For sure. For sure. And then Governor Wes Moore says, you might as could you approve the FEMA funding for Western Maryland, which is a deflection, by the way. It is Democrats in the Senate right now who are actively shutting down the government, or I'm sorry,
Partial,
shutting down a
shutdown.
partial parts of the government, which includes FEMA. So get your party in order before you start throwing stones at the president who's actually trying to help you. So,
Well, my favorite thing about the partial government shutdown, which obviously includes DHS and other parts of that, which FEMA is part of DHS, is that it's over ICE operations, which ICE is fully f***ing funded through OBBB, the One Big Beautiful Bill.
Yeah. Their messaging
So
is all over the place. They don't even know what the hell they're shutting it down for, but they need to give their rabid base some kind of wins. Like, oh, look, the government's partially shut down. Well, what part are you shutting down? Oh, the part that would clean up the dirty river where all the Democrats live.
it's absolutely insane. This situation's getting much worse. I mean, originally the estimate was 9 months to repair it, which, it totally ridiculous on its face. Now the revised timeline is 4 to 6 weeks. But even if they get this repaired in 4 to 6 weeks, the damage that's been done to the river is, honestly unknown at this point, because it's not like, okay, they stop it and then the river just cleans itself up. Like, this has leached into the sediment at the bottom of the river. The poop has settled to the bottom of the river. So
And they say
I'm not.
it does so more since it's cold out and it's frozen. It just gets settled on the bottom as opposed to flowing through.
Correct. Yes. Well, for the first like 2 weeks of this spill, the river was completely frozen over. And so there's a lot of unknowns about that. We at this point, it seems like this whole summer might not even be able to be used, the river, at all, even for boating. Right now they're saying that boats shouldn't go on the river. I mean, they're obviously they're it's the winter, but this could also strongly affect the America 250 celebration this summer, because the river's a huge part of that, and the river is obviously a great viewing point for the fireworks, as we were on your boat last year watching the fireworks. It's pretty sad to see. And there's always these memes about literal, rivers full of shit in India, and we have that here now in our nation's capital.
Yeah, shouldn't be like that. This is going to affect the economy. It's going to affect the fishing industry, the tourism industry, the all the boats, all the I don't know how many tourist boats that go out there. They're all going to be shut down, and Democrats have to own for it. But Wes Moore says it's basically contained. So maybe he'll eat a fish out of the river, just like one of what's he's a director of DC Department of
Oh my
Environment. He
God,
says he
that
would
was
eat.
insane.
He says he would eat fish caught in the Potomac River right now. Yeah, eat to own Donald Trump. That's taking derangement syndrome to a whole nother level.
Well, and the funny thing is, one, I would have never eaten fish caught in the Potomac River regardless, even before
Hell
this. But I'm like, okay, you say that, can do it.
Yeah,
Go
do it on
catch a
camera.
fish and then cook it and then eat it on camera. I'd love
Yeah,
to can see that.
And live stream your funeral for us all to laugh at because
But
this
you
has
know, this is basically contained much like Westmore's presidential ambitions, Mr. My Family and the whole KKK thing, which was a total lie, and the lie about his military service as well. I mean, the guy is, you know, if Hakeem Jeffries is Timu Obama, whatever the f is below Timu, that's what this guy is. He's that Obama. And I don't even know what's below Timu at this point, but you know, some thick ass Canal Street Obama.
maybe Hakeem Jeffries need a promotion. Maybe he can be like Wayfair Obama and then Westmore's too. Because I don't think it gets any worse than that, but
Obama, although they're all white. Oh, they're all white, so I don't know if that works. All right, let's keep moving here.
moving on.
Let's see. AOC had quite the weekend. She was in Munich for the security conference, at which, by the way, if you have not listened or seen Marco Rubio's speech at this conference this weekend, it is well worth the watch of the 26-minute speech. It is by far one of the best speeches I've ever seen an American politician give. Certainly one of the best speech of our lifetime, of your and I's lifetime, by a Secretary of State. And he basically, in that speech, told Europe, F you, get your act together. And then they stood and gave him a standing ovation. And it's like, that's really something. But one of the bigger stories that also came out of the weekend was AOC. Because she went over there and, you know, noted foreign policy expert that she is. I'm not even sure why she was there, because not only is she not on the Foreign Affairs Committee, but basically has nothing to do with foreign affairs in her role in the House. She had did an interview with you know, or a panel, whatever the hell it was. The videos that came out of it, why don't you go ahead and take a listen to this, and then we'll talk about it.
And to all of you, and Congressman, I'll start with you. Would and should the U.S. actually commit U.S. troops to defend Taiwan if China were to move?
You know, I think that this is such a, you know, I think that this is, of course, a very longstanding policy of the United States. And I think what we are hoping for is that we want to make sure that we never get to that point. And we want to make sure that we are moving in all of our economic research and our global positions to avoid any such confrontation and for that question to even arise.
Oh, so no idea, no idea. And also, a side note, the Fuhrer Whitmer was there as well. And she also had a complete flub on foreign policy on Ukraine. And at least she admitted she didn't know what she was talking about. But you know, these are two Democrat presidential hopefuls, right? Who want to be in charge of foreign policy of the United States. They have no clue what they're talking about.
I mean, you asked why was AOC there in the first place? She had no reason to be there other than she's planning to launch her presidential campaign. And if this is how it got off to the on the wrong foot, I mean, this is worse than Ron DeSantis Twitter live streaming his campaign launch, and it doesn't even get off the ground. I mean, this is as bad as it gets, and she knows it was bad because she had to call the New York Times up unprovoked. She called the New York Times, and she was trying to run damage control. She's like, please get a story out about this. She called Kellyanne Browning of the New York Times, and a couple quotes she said. Everyone's got this story wrong, that this is about me running for president. Global democracies are on fire the world over. And whatever that means, it's not even English. So she's calling the New York Times. She knows it was this bad. She said, am I acting like someone who's trying to run? No, because I'm there for a very different specific purpose. And what purpose was that? To embarrass America on the world stage? We already did that years ago with Joe Biden when he apologized on the world stage for everything that is great about America. Apologizing for America is over. Marco Rubio is the new standard. And it couldn't have gotten much worse for AOC. And
Well, yeah, of course, she runs to the New York Times because she finds a willing propagandist who got on his knees to suck her off. And it's the most ridiculous thing. And I love how that was just openly telegraphed, by the way. He said it as if it wasn't a problem whatsoever, that she ran to him and he just printed whatever the hell she wanted. And, you
And the
know.
story didn't have anything that contradicted AOC's side of things. He didn't
Well,
insert
no.
anything else. It was just like, okay, I'll run a press release for you. Why not?
Yeah, of
Off
course.
your
And
ass.
they have the gall to criticize conservative media for covering the Trump administration favorably. But, you know, when they do it, it's totally fine. Classic.
Yeah. J.D. Vance was asked about her performance with Martha McCallum yesterday. I'll just read you what he wrote. He said, "Does anybody really believe that AOC has very thoughtful ideas about the global world order? This is a person who is mouthing the slogans that somebody else gave her," which I think is perfectly said because she's got her canned responses, and then she's asked something that she's not prepared for. She pulls a Kamala Harris times 10 because I don't know, Hakeem Jeffries didn't tell me how to answer this yet. There's nothing authentic
Well,
about.
no, you know who's telling her how to answer? It's Soros's son. He was
Yeah,
there.
Alex Soros. That's
Yeah, everyone was getting their knee pads out for that one. So, all right, let's see what else we got here. Oh, big story this week on the left. You know, it's another manufactured outrage. Real piece of shit running for the Senate down in Texas, Democrat James Tallarico. I guess that's how you say it. I really don't know or care. He was apparently did an interview with Stephen Colbert for CBS, which, by the way, why is he even still on air? That guy, I thought he was fired, but you
Yeah,
know,
he
besides
was canceled already, and I actually wouldn't be surprised if he gets canceled in the next day or two because the way he reacted to this story, which you're about to explain, was shameful. He just mocked CBS's to their face like again last night.
Well, so, you know, this guy did an interview with Colbert. The legal department at CBS said, well, you know, if you do this, you buy FCC's equal time rule, which has been in effect since I think 1982, you have to offer the same interview to Jasmine Crockett and the other people that are running in the Texas Senate race. Which, of course, Colbert said, no. This was all one big op, by the way, because the people who run the Democrat Party want him to be the candidate, not Jasmine Crockett, for obvious reasons. You know, I mean, we don't have to go down that rabbit hole, but it's, and so then they chose, the Late Show chose to present the interview through its YouTube channel with some on-air promotion instead of running the interview on full broadcast because that would invoke potentially the equal time. Well, then, you know, of course, this Tallarico guy says, Donald Trump didn't want you to see this. His FCC refused to air my interview. That's not how this works, but, you know, besides the fact. And then he says, Trump's worried we're about to flip Texas. Yeah, keep dreaming, loser. But the funny thing is, this entire saga has now resulted in Jasmine Crockett defending the Trump administration. Take a listen.
We did receive information suggesting that the federal government did not shut down this segment. Number one, that is my understanding that the federal government didn't shut this down, and we will do an official statement.
And then she also had this to say when she was talking to Jen Psaki further about the equal time.
We actually received a phone call, and that was a little bit earlier today. And in that call, they explained that they actually told CBS that they could go ahead and move forward with the interview of James Tallarico. They just needed to offer me equal time. I did not get a request from the Colbert Show to go on. As you know, I've been on Colbert multiple times. And frankly, if we would have gotten an offer, that would have been great, but we're in the middle of early voting.
Interesting. And then, of course, this guy says our campaign raised $2.5 million in 24 hours after the Trump FCC banned our interview. Well, one, that's not how it works, but you know, maybe you should know how things work before you try to run for Senate. You know, who would think that's a novel idea though? But yeah, this was all one big op.
Yeah, it got so much publicity just by this. I mean, the rules were obvious before they started this. CBS told Stephen Colbert, well, you're going to have to provide equal time. And he said, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to do it anyway. It's not going to be broadcasted live on air. We're going to put it on YouTube and then we're going to complain about it. And then we're going to get 2.5 million views because we've been complaining about it. Jasmine Crockett's complaining about it. And then we get to promote our interview even more. It's so obvious what they did. It's kind of a win-win-win for everybody because, except for, Republicans who don't want to see this. But Stephen Colbert can bitch and moan. He gets more popular. James Tallarico bitch and moan. He gets more popular. And same with Jasmine Crockett. And like you said, James Tallarico raised $2.5 million off of all of this. But the biggest question and the biggest thing that we're left wondering is why wouldn't Stephen Colbert want Jasmine Crockett on her sh his show to begin with? It's clear that the Democrat Party, who is Stephen Colbert, and I think a lot of Democrats take their orders from him because he's just so edgy and popular with our viewers. He decided James Tallarico should be the candidate because Jasmine Crockett just again, you can check out episodes anywhere between 500 to the episode we're running right now. You know how crazy she is. They don't want her near a microphone and they don't want her representing the Democrat Party, which is what Donald Trump, rightfully so, is trying to make her the face of. A whole bunch of story out of nothing. But it only thing that it unveiled is that James Colbert would prefer Jasmine Crockett not be the nominee. So totally nuts.
The Mamdani experiment up in New York is off to a great start. Weeks after not being able to clear the street of snow and garbage piling on every corner like it's a third world country, which is much like he's used to, you now have the excessive raising of taxes to pay for his ridiculous programs. There was a great moment on CNN last night with Kevin O'Leary, Mr. Wonderful, where he just slammed the CNN panel on how f-ing insane all of these things are. Take a listen.
All right, Kevin, a quick last word.
Oh, wow.
Which I'm
My
not
last
sure.
word is you're all nuts. Like, that's just.
Oh, my
God.
Gosh.
Thank you, Kevin. That's
guys,
am
guys,
I in on
please.
that? Okay.
Look, we got to keep it together here, okay?
We are late.
Honestly, I mean,
We are.
there's a way to talk about these things. If you don't have anything to say, just
No,
say that,
I
and I
just
won't
said
come to you
something
next
very
time.
important to
You
me.
don't
All
have
right.
anything.
And they are. They're absolutely insane what's going on up there. And I'm not going to take time to review all the policies. We've heard it over and over again. But they're going to raise property taxes about 10% on everyone. That's going to flow down into rent, and it's going to push more and more people out of the city down to freedom states. Hopefully it's just the Republicans leaving and they continue to vote Republican, not the fucking Democrats. But the Democrats that voted this shit in, and then they're like, oh, we might have to leave the city. Well, you did this. But most important of the Mamdani administration this weekend was the exposing of not just a bunch of Jew haters, because we know that's what they are, but also this lady, and her name is Nurdin Kizwani. What did she have to say about New York City?
Well, she took to her ex, and she's just a prominent New York leftist Muslim.
Yeah, but she has ties to Mamdani.
She okay, I didn't exactly know her title, but
And she
I know
doesn't have
she.
an official title in the administration, but she's one of the terrorist group leaders up there, so he's good friends with her.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Well, so what she said on X the other day, she said, finally, New York City is coming to Islam. Dogs definitely have a place in society, just not as indoor pets. Like we've said all along, they are unclean. So this is going to obviously set off a shitstorm with most Americans who love their dogs, they love their pets. This woman thinks that they have no place in society. And first of all, let me full disclosure, Storm, I have a minority opinion on this, but it is the correct opinion. I can't
No,
stand
it's the
dogs.
fucking wrong opinion.
Well, I think it's the correct opinion. It's the minority opinion. Sometimes the truth hurts.
Yeah, well, you can go hang out with the Muslims then.
Dogs do not have a place in society. If they do have a place in society, it's out in a big giant yard on a farm or somewhere that they can run a lot. I mean, I don't ever want to like I would never want a dog because I don't feel like picking up shit. every morning. It's miserable. Like, I don't ever want to do that. I don't want to bail on my friends when I have plans to go out later that night. But I also believe that if people want to torture themselves by owning a dog, you should have every right to do so. And I'll let you tell me why I'm wrong in a little bit. But
Yeah, no worries. Don't worry.
Bonnie doesn't think that people should have the ability to decide for that. She got absolutely slammed on Twitter as a result of this. Congressman Randy Fine went from the top ropes. He said, "If you force us to choose, the choice between dogs and Muslims is not a difficult one." So he's clearly choosing dogs. Nurdin Keswani responded, "Randy Fine posted this genocidal statement about me. Thing is, no one is forcing you to choose. He's just like the millions of other racists hounding me this week." Yada, 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 yada. The thing is, you can't replace any other major religion with Islam in Fine's statement because no major religion besides Islam has a comprehensive legal system that explicitly requires non-Muslims to live under a religious rule and penalties from society that govern it. So, no, it's just kind of crazy. And then Nurdin Keswani plays victim, people replying with dog pics. "It's supposed to bother me. Meanwhile, these pics are adorable." She says, "All I was saying is that they deserve better than a life confined by a tiny apartment." And while I agree with that, yes, dogs deserve life, not confined to a tiny apartment, that is not what she was saying in her original tweet. She was saying that New York is coming to Islam, which would ban dogs, not because they live in small spaces. Storm,
Yeah,
tell me why dogs
well,
are the best.
okay, well, dogs are the best, first off. And your take in the 594 episodes of Triggered might be the worst one that we've ever heard on here, but we'll get past that. First off, I would gladly sacrifice whatever, however many billion Muslims are on this planet for one dog. Okay, that's how I feel about it. And Congressman Randy Fine was very correct when he said, quote, "If they force us to choose, the choice between dogs and Muslims is not a difficult one." But getting past the dog point, the line in there that really struck me was New York City is coming to Islam. And almost 25 years after 9/11, if you would have told me in the days after 9/11 that anything like this would ever happen in that city, I would have told you to put down the crack pipe. But here we are, and terrorists are now in control of our largest city. And it is really a sad day for America that this is occurring. Even getting past the whole dog thing, which, obviously is ridiculous. But the whole Islam New York City thing is a travesty. And it's really insane to me that this happened up there. I don't even have the words for how mad it makes me. Both of us growing up in New Jersey, 9/11 was a very, very seminal moment in our lives. And to see this happening to that city, is really, really sad and angering. Hopefully they'll course correct, but I don't really know if they can at this point. But it makes my blood boil, honestly, what's occurring up there. And we'll be coming up on the 25th anniversary of 9/11 this year. Which I'm sure will be, commemorated a lot and a pretty big moment for the country, especially coming off the heels of America 250. It's going to be very interesting to see what role the mayor of New York City plays in that. Obviously, Mayor Rudy Giuliani, America's mayor, the best mayor in honestly the history of the country. He led the city through the darkest of times. And to have that office now held by this terrorist and his terrorist pals is really just a sad moment for that great city and for America, honestly.
Yeah, they say we should never forget, which and we should never forget. Apparently, it only takes 25 years to forget.
Yeah, they forgot. They
Yeah.
forgot. The city forgot. So, all right, we're gonna wrap up here because I got to run to another meeting. But thank you, of course, for listening. And if you want to support the work we're doing here on tr not only just Triggered, but all of Town Hall Media, we'd love for you to join us as a Town Hall VIP member if you have not already. And so many of you Triggered listeners are Town Hall VIPs, and we really appreciate your support. Not only I, but Corey cannot do our jobs and provide the information that we do without your support. So if you're not a VIP member yet, go to townhallvip.com, use the promo code FIGHT for 60% off to get into this club of patriots. We love all of you. Thank you for listening. If we go to war with I will be back here next Wednesday. I just looked at my schedule for the post State of the Union episode. We'll see if Matt decides to rejoin us from the Bahamas or if he just stays down there. But of course, thank you as always for listening to Triggered. And we will be back here next Wednesday, February 25th, for another episode of Triggered.